Tech and Talk Radio about all things all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemon.
Good morning and welcome to Intravenous on CJSF 90.1 FM, campus and community radio from Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded ancestral territories of the Kwikwetlem, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh peoples. I'm Robin. I am one of the voices that you will hear on today's show. I'm very excited to have one of the sister team from Far From the Tree Productions as our guest in today's show, talking about their upcoming production called The Pink Unicorn, and we'll get more into that. Just to sort of, you know, settle into things a little bit and allow us here on this side of the radio to gather ourselves together. We're going to hear this track that was just dropped today by a local artist, mainly spoken word artist. This is their first musical debut, and it is by Angelica Solomon, and this is called When I Use My Voice, which I thought was kind of an appropriate song for Intravenous. So here we go.
Care. plant the seeds of love. Stand firm in your power. Speak your truth.
Angelica Solomon, that was, with a track called When I Use My Voice off a just dropped album this morning. I received that press release notice yesterday and thought that I would share that big news right away. I'm Robin, and I am joined in studio this morning with my, as of late, regular co-host, Nat.
Hello.
And if you were listening from the beginning of the show, I have as our guest Shell Waiminga, who is one of the founding members of Far From the Tree Productions, which is an indie theater company based in Vancouver and Richmond. Shell and their sister Joelle started the company with a desire to produce theater that is environmentally sustainable and minimalist in nature while still maintaining the highest artistic standard. Their mandate is to create honest, intimate theater that explores the complexity of human relations, particularly those bonds within family, whether defined by blood, choice, or circumstance. And they are presenting the funny and starkly honest play called The Pink Unicorn by Elise Fourier-Edie from July 18th to 29th at the Pacific Theatre. Hello, Shell, and welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's always a bit of a challenge to, you know, get people up here on the mountain. So I'm super glad that you made the trek and found where we are, because that is also a bit of a thing.
Yeah, that aspect was a little bit challenging, but I managed to get here.
Yay! I want to begin our sort of discussion today about the show just with a little bit of a Cole's Notes about your upcoming staging of the play The Pink Unicorn, just to give our audience an idea of some of the themes addressed by the playwright.
Cool. It's funny, usually when I'm working on a show, I get asked about it so many times that I end up having like a pre-prepared kind of blurb about it, and I have not figured out how to consistently describe this one. Basically, it is a solo show. It's a one-performer kind of a deal, and it's told from the perspective of Trisha Lee, who is a small-town Christian Texan mom, and she talks about having her child come out as non-binary a week before they start high school. And it's very sweet. The whole play kind of centers around Trisha very clumsily but enthusiastically trying to figure out how to support her kid, but, you know, having to deal with her own biases and her own hang-ups and coming face-to-face with some of her own prejudices. Our particular version of it, instead of the actor portraying Trisha herself, obviously, I'm not a, you know, middle-aged Texan woman, so I'm actually playing Joe, who's Trisha's child. I'm setting the show up so that I'm Joe going back and remembering watching their mom's process of learning to become their ally and accepting them. So it's a little bit unconventional, but hopefully still really funny, and Trisha is a delight to play.
Great. Yeah, thank you. I know, I mean, I've never heard of this play. I think it's relatively new-ish, maybe 10 years old?
Yeah, I believe it is exactly 10 years old. I think the first production was in 2013. It hasn't been done a ton in Canada. I know there was a production of it in Calgary a few years ago, but I found this play. It was recommended to me when I was doing my apprenticeship at Pacific Theater a couple years ago. The artistic director, Ron Reed, gave it to me because I was looking for things to produce. And he was like, oh, there's a young non-binary person who's at the center of the show. And I read it and I was like, yeah, but it's meant to be played by an older woman. So I put it away for a while, never thinking that I'd have a chance to do it. But after reapproaching it post-pandemic, I kind of came up with this idea of how to switch the narrative to be from Joe's perspective. So
okay, cool. I had to do a little bit of reading up on it, and I know some of the themes that came up in the things that I was reading about are very timely, I thought, in terms of, the social narrative out there in the world, and just, these ideas of not just identity and, how we gender identify or sexually identify, but also, as your mandate to produce theater also says, like, who you find as your tribe, and what it means to belong somewhere and those bigger sort of universal themes.
Totally. It's actually wild because even though it's only 10 years old, a lot of things have changed in the last 10 years. Like I was thinking about it and trying to remember, I don't even know if I knew any non-binary people 10 years ago. I mean, aside from myself, I do identify as non-binary. I just had no idea at the time. So the fact that this play is still, it still feels so poignant now, and the themes discussed in it, there's an element of which I, like, it would be nice if we were a little bit further along. But some of the shifts that have been happening in the world are continuing to make the more scary issues in the play still very relevant. We are also doing a slightly updated version of the show. Elise, the playwright, has been amazing and supportive. So we're doing an edit that she's constantly going back and revisiting it, because as we work on political types of art, things change, the language that we use changes, we grow, we learn. So the way that we talked about it 10 years ago, slightly different than the way that we would talk about it today. So she's done a few updates here and there. So I think the edition that we're working from was finished in 2022, I believe.
Wow. Yeah. That's really cool that you get to work and sort of update things as you go, which continues to make that art more relevant.
Yeah,
and keep it relevant.
Yeah, I've been really impressed with Elise, actually, because not all artists, not all playwrights are open to having their work changed. And that was a big condition when Joelle and I were talking about doing this show. I'd read it, I loved it, but there were some elements of it where I was like, where we're at, this part could work a little bit better. And we had this concept of wanting the play to be presented by Joe instead of by Trisha. And so we contacted Elise and kind of said, like, this is what we're pitching. Would you be comfortable with us doing this or tweaking things here and there to make it work if we need to? And she was basically like, oh, yeah. Like, do whatever you need to do. I mean, check with me first. But the important thing is that this story gets told, this play gets done. So whatever format that's happening in, I am happy. So that was really cool. And she also told us that the play is intensely personal to her, because in a lot of ways she is Trisha. She wrote it about her own experience having a trans child who came out at a very I guess, tumultuous time right when they were moving to a really small conservative community. And she talked about suddenly needing to come face to face with a lot of her own prejudices, having been a theater artist and be like, oh, yeah, I'm woke. I know things. And then realizing, oh, like it's when it's my own kid. Now suddenly I'm seeing a lot of the hangups that I have that I wasn't aware of and challenging that. So I think it's she's been so supportive, and the vulnerability I think it takes to be willing to see your work evolve and adapt as the world changes is really impressive.
Here on Intravenous, which is the show that you're listening to if you're out in the listening audience, we talk a lot about gender, but it actually might be the first time listeners are hearing what that is, or maybe they need a reminder about what we're actually talking about, because the conversation today revolves, a fair bit around that. How do you understand or explain gender identity?
Oh, man. Yeah, I read this question and I thought about it, and I still don't have a fully formulated answer, because I think that everybody's relationship to their own gender is different, and how they experience the divide between sex and gender is potentially very individual. The really short answer, I guess, is you've got your biological sex is the body parts that you were born with, and your gender is more about your identity and how you feel internally, and that may or may not align with how society puts us into boxes based on the bodies that we're born in. That's, I guess, the simpler way that I'd put it. But I think that gender can be... short answer is I think that in a lot of ways gender's fake. Gender is something that is, it's a societal construct, and if it helps us to understand ourselves, to kind of give ourselves a label, then great. I think some people maybe don't even need a label. Some people feel a lot of empowerment in the gender that they were assigned at birth, and some people don't. Some people don't care, and that's okay. I think that's what I've got. Trisha actually has a really good line in the play that's very funny. She says at one point, there's a scene where she's talking about looking things up on the internet, and she says, gender is on a scale, like autism. Only on one end you've got Marilyn Monroe, and on the other end you've got Charles Bronson, and everybody in the world falls somewhere in between. And I'm like, yeah, go off, Trisha. Good for you.
Will you be doing the Texan accent for the whole play?
I will be doing various accents for most of the show. We're going to see how effective it becomes. Mostly, like, Trisha's kind of, like, Texan accent. When I slip into Joe, like, there's a couple of times where I become Joe, and I keep it a bit closer to my natural voice. I get to play Trisha's mom a few times, who's described as a Southern woman from Atlanta, so she's a lot more, like Georgian Southern Belle. I get to play like a Southern preacher at one point.
That sounds very fun.
Yeah.
A real tour of accents of the US.
It's a good time. We'll see how accurate I get it. But
and you get to play all kinds of genders.
Mm-hmm.
Also.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that part, but you are absolutely correct.
Not to stereotype anyone, but I see the Southern Belle and the priest as very specific, in a very specific box, and maybe that's my own bias. But.
Oh yeah, no, they're very much on the further ends of that gender spectrum,
right?
Yeah, we've got Granny is like old Southern lady. Trisha has another line where she talks about Southern culture being so gendered, especially as far as the women are concerned, because they all want to be a lady. And while being a proper lady may include delivering your baby on a battlefield while holding off a platoon of bloodthirsty Yankees with nothing but an antique silver shrimp fork, no lady does that without which she has her hair coiffed, her lipstick on, and a little splash of Jean Nate. It's like, it's so good.
Wow, thank goodness we're beyond those days in
some
pale ways. Some pale ways.
And yeah. In some places. Yeah, I think we're fortunate to be where we are geographically in the world. So
yeah, for sure. The press release that I received from you folks begins with this quote, and I'm assuming that it is from the play. It reads, "Because loving you just the way you are is the light that will lead me through the dark world." How do you interpret or appreciate the impact of this line?
So, yeah, this could be a little bit of a long one. I grew up in the central interior of BC in a very small town. Both of my parents are Presbyterian ministers, which is quite fun, actually, because the church that is talked about in the play is the Presbyterian Church of the United States. And it's right at the time when the USA Presbyterian Church had decided to ordain openly gay ministers. And the Canadian Presbyterian Church has just kind of gone through the whole gay marriage debate and whether or not they will affirm gay marriage, and they've decided that they will. But that's been something that's been very much in my life, just with my family in the last several years. So having grown up in a small town in a more conservative context, I very much was raised with this belief that we didn't really talk about gender specifically, but like being gay is, you know, what I was taught is being gay wasn't necessarily wrong, but gay marriage isn't marriage, and that it's, you know, sinful to act on those desires. So as I was going to high school and then university and really like starting to question what I believed, because very, very early on I started to be like, I don't know. And the more I'm in theater, so the more I found some of my best friends were gay, and then realizing that most of my best friends were queer in some way, before I even had a clue about it relating to myself, the thing that finally kind of tipped me over the edge into being willing to fiercely defend my queer friends was this idea of love. And even in my like faith background and my upbringing, this idea of love being the main driving force, and I'm meant to love unconditionally. And so if I'm supposed to do that, if that's what everything hangs on, then I need to live a life that is going to include loving especially my marginalized friends as best I can. So that was a huge part of my process. And then a couple of years later, starting to go down the rabbit hole of examining myself and realizing that I also am queer and also am genderqueer, and having to explain that to various people in my life and firsthand kind of experiencing that, like, you know, some people have been very, very accepting, and other people, you can see the discomfort as soon as it comes up, and the hang-ups around, like, well, but my beliefs say this, but also culture says this, and I don't know. And I think that the kind of cry that's been in my heart is a lot of just like, but can't you just love me? doesn't just loving me, isn't that just enough? So I feel very, very personally attached to that line. And in the context of the show, that really is Trisha's guiding force the entire time as she wrestles with what she believes and the pressures of her community and her family, is this idea that Joe, her child, is her North Star. This idea of trying to walk through the darkness and not necessarily knowing where you're going, not knowing how to do allyship perfectly, not knowing what the end result is going to look like or where, if there is an end result, but always having that light to look to, that North Star of this is my love for my child and I know that's the direction that I'm heading in.
What a beautiful answer.
Thanks.
And sometimes you just can't make stuff up, right? Like the fact that you get handed this play that is about the Presbyterian Church. Oh my gosh. And, you know, that there's so much commonality there that reflects back into your own life, right?
Yeah.
Which also kind of harkens back to this quote a little bit, because, you know, it's leading you through some of the darkness to find what that light is.
Yeah, it's wild. There's been so many times in rehearsal that Joelle and I look at each other and we're like, was Elise watching us grow up? Like, did she know these things? To the point where we've got pictures that are going to be a part of the show that are projected onto the wall and in some of our promo material. And we've actually used pictures of our mom to be Trisha. And we've got pictures of me and my mom when I was like a kid in my cowboy boots running around. So it's very close to home.
Right. Yeah. There's a woman that I follow, and your answer to that question that I had made me think about her. She talks a lot, you know, and I think all of us in studio can probably resonate with how much fear-mongering there is out there in the world, right? It doesn't matter what you do. There's something to make you feel scared out of your wits about if you don't do it their way or that way, then, you know, there'll be fire and brimstone somehow. And her reminder all the time is reach for love. Mm. Reach for love. And I really try to hold those three words, you know, just like it seems like such a simple thing.
Yeah.
But you know, it's amazing how many times we still need to be reminded, you know, just reach for love. That's the path, right?
Well, it's by far the scarier thing that comes out near the end of the play. Trisha has several different quotes. It's wild. Some of the things that you've even just said are like, oh yeah, those are words that I say. She talks about it's always so much easier to hate than it is to reach out your hand. And this idea of reaching out your hand in the dark. You don't necessarily know where you're going. You don't know what you're going to find, but you're always going to find, there's always someone. There's always someone to guide you, even if you're not doing it perfectly. So.
Which is also a good reminder, because I think that's a lot of where the fear comes from, right? Is that we're gonna mess up and make something worse, or, you know, make ourselves look bad, which is, you know.
Yeah.
Even worse than doing it badly is, yeah, making ourselves look bad. So, there was a review from when the play was produced by the Boston Speakeasy Stage Company in the Arts Fuse, and it warns, chances are good that some of your unexamined biases will be challenged. What have you learned about your own presumptions or biases by undertaking this project?
Interesting. I think what my sister and I have both discovered through this process is we came into it thinking, yeah, this is mostly a story about queer identity and allyship and the mother-child relationship. And what's been really cool is noticing all of the subtle ways that Elise has managed to weave in different marginalized groups throughout the play, and how Trisha as a character, once she starts examining her biases toward one group, i.e. The queer community and learning about them, it starts to automatically adjust her judgments and open her eyes to other marginalized groups around her. So there are moments in the play, you know, she's a Texan woman and she's very blunt and set and like filterless. So there are things that she says that are a little wild. There are moments of where she says things that are quite ableist and fat phobic, and at first they seem like throwaway lines, and they seem almost like, oh, like I had a moment where I was like, oh, some of these things I'm slightly uncomfortable saying them, but throughout the show you start to see how those biases that she has have been challenged as well. So I think for me, it was realizing that all of these judgments that we have about people who are different from us, whether it's something as visible as, you know, gender representation or gender identity or sexual identity or race, or something that's more subtle like mental health or somebody being an alcoholic. There's a relationship in the play between Trisha and her brother who is an alcoholic. And I think the first time she mentions him, she references him being an unapologetic drunk who's of absolutely no use to anybody at all, I think is the quote. And by the end of it, there is, without spoiling too much, there's some realization there of what is behind his illness, and it's seen for what it is an illness, and that I think for me was something that stood out as like, it's in the community that I'm in, it's in some ways easy for me to be accepting of people's you know, gender presentation and their sexuality and their body type and race, but things like alcoholism, things that are a little bit more taboo and easy to mistakenly blame on the individual, I felt very like called out in that moment. And I've definitely had friendships in my life that have been really, really damaged by my inability to empathize with a person's struggle. So yeah, it's been really profound and cool in that sense.
It definitely sounds like a story with just so many of these different elements that are still related, and talking about how you've been updating it to today, it feels like it could go in so many different directions or kind of be retold in different ways.
Yeah, definitely. It's really nice because it's a solo show. It's very adaptable. You can do it. I mean, I've chosen to do it from a completely different perspective as a different performer than would normally be performing it. But yeah, because it's like it's got a whole bunch of little threads that kind of all come toward the central idea of, like, it's easy to hate people who are different because we're afraid. Because we're afraid that we're going to do something wrong and it's going to be uncomfortable. But at the end of the day, we don't have to be afraid to just reach out our hand and just do our best. And we guide each other through the darkness.
This seems like a very good time to take a song break and just let some of this stuff settle with with myself, for one, and maybe members of our audience as well. We're going to have a listen to a track called Surface Tension by Canadian artist, who's also a spoken word artist and a great scholar, Leanne Bettisimoke Simpson. This is off her album Theory of Ice here on Intravenous.
And you can't get lost.
And the river only goes one way. And you can't get lost. Welcome back to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM, Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded ancestral territories of the Coquitlam, the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. I'm Robin, and Nat, along with Shell Waiminga, one of the founding members of Far From the Tree Productions, who is our guest. We've been chatting about the upcoming production called The Pink Unicorn, which is going to be at the Pacific Theatre July 18th to 29th. Mm-hmm. And just touching on some of the themes and the learnings and challenges of mounting this very timely but I already used the word challenging, so I didn't want to use it again. But maybe I just have to this timely but challenging play. You know. So much of how we think about ourselves and the past, you know, future, present, and past, is so deeply rooted in male, white, cisgendered mythologies. Just for all you in the listening audience, I'm shaking my head. How do you think creativity helps us reframe outdated notions of who we are and who we can be?
When I read this question before, the first thought that I had was, well, being creative already is challenging the patriarchy because we do have a tendency to, there are qualities and there are ways of thinking that are so often gendered in our understanding of them. I remember even studying in university and looking at, in my theatrical literature classes, and looking at play structure, and this idea of certain structures being classified as masculine and others as feminine. And in certain ways, just the act of creativity is so often typically seen as like a feminine trait, those quote unquote softer skills being artistic. You even just look at like the way that boys are so often raised. Boys are thrust into sports and pressured to take on certain careers and trajectories, whereas girls are more often encouraged to take on the more creative arts and like draw and paint and dance and do theater. So yeah, there's just an element of which I think that doing art is kind of itself an act of rebellion against that kind of structure. I also think though that as soon as you start using your imagination, you can be anybody you want. And that's also super challenging. I remember a couple years ago, also when I was doing my apprenticeship at Pacific Theater, I did my final project there. I sort of interned for a year at the theater company, and then I was given a couple opportunities to produce my own work. And my final project was a production of Henry V, and it was a mostly female cast. My original intention was like, it'll be an all-female cast unless some guy comes in here and absolutely blows me away, and that did happen. There was like one man, and he was lovely and such an ally. But I played Henry, and I remember going to various like events and stuff, and people always ask, they're like, well, what are you working on right now? And I'd say, oh, I'm working on Henry V. And they're like, oh, cool. Who are you playing? And I'd be like, Henry. And the reaction that people had, most like femme types or assigned female at birth, people would immediately respond to that with this like, whoa, okay, that's cool. Most of the cis men that I told, there would just be a moment of like, how do I use words to describe the look that I got? There'd just be this kind of look that would say to me like, but that's my role. You can't have that one. And so I bring that up because I think that theater and just playing pretend and make believe, because that's really what theater is, gives us an opportunity to step outside the rules that are prescribed to us and actually demonstrate how arbitrary those rules are, because anybody can do anything. I absolutely can play Henry V, and I absolutely can play a demure princess if I want to, and it's just about how I choose to express myself at the time. And everybody is that way. Not everybody necessarily wants to. I think that it's, as theater artists, we have a really cool opportunity to challenge as much as we feel like of the gender norms and expectations. And it's, it's really special.
Yeah, I think definitely the theater has this real affinity with this. But I think any kind of imagination or the willingness to step outside of predefined roles and to redefine those roles yourself, I think it's almost one of the best challenges to any system of domination. And, you know, patriarchy is sort of the first of those, maybe.
Totally. Being able to show like, oh, you think I can't do what you can do? Watch me. But then also having like somebody who is perhaps like a strong, cisgendered, heteronormative male be willing to step outside of that stereotype and play something that's a lot more sensitive and quote-unquote feminine is another, I think, like, beautiful thing. Like, I always think back to Robert De Niro in the movie Stardust, where he's playing this pirate who is he's gay, and he's very, like, he likes to dress up in like pretty clothes and strut around in his captain quarters, and it's played off as like, it's a bit of a laugh because it's Robert De Niro, but it is also so beautiful to watch. And then when his crew finally finds out about it, they're like, oh yeah, we've always known about this, it's fine, it's chill, we don't think any less of you.
I need to watch this film. I didn't know this was real.
It's very sweet.
I haven't seen it either. Stardust?
Yeah.
So it's called?
Yeah.
Put it on my list. We've kind of addressed this this query that I have a little bit, but I was reading, as I mentioned, because I didn't know a lot about the play and just, you know, wanted to beef up on what the heck I was going to talk to you about. And one of the criticisms of the play that I read was how it centered a non-LGBTQ person and allowing that character complete authority over the story. Mm. And you know, you've mentioned how your production responded to this. Is, how did you come to that decision of wanting to tell the story in a different way?
Mm. Yeah, it was a lot of talks. I work mostly, my sister and I are the two main members of the company, but we have a couple of artistic advisors that we work with as well, one of whom we have worked with very closely. Her name is Tiffany Thomas, and she's a trans woman. So the three of us, all as, you know, people of varying gender experiences in the world, kind of approached this play in very different ways. And I was the one initially who was just like, I think I can do this. I think that this would be great. And both Joelle and Tiff had like similar moments of like, I don't know. because there are instances we're watching somebody go through the process of learning. So for most of the play, Trisha is still using their child's birth name and misgendering them, using their old pronouns. The name ends up kind of, it's like alternating between like calling them Joe and using their birth name. And it's the kind of thing that, especially in our context, like in Vancouver, where it's a little bit more progressive, and where we knew that a lot of the people coming to see the show would be queer and would be people who would be very, very close to this subject. I think the hesitancy was like, we don't want it to hurt anybody to see this mother misgendering her child. And for me, I always had this idea of like, no. Like, there's something here. There's something different about this. It's not just a matter of like sloppy playwriting or somebody not caring. It's like, I can feel something here. And partly because the play is really aspirational for me in a lot of ways. Like watching this parent who's just so willing to stand up and make all of the mistakes and still keep trying is like, I think that it's very, very easy for us to dismiss people who don't do something perfectly. And the fact is, I mean, growing up where I did, people don't have access to the same education around like what terms are current and what ways of talking about this are considered socially acceptable. So they can like step in it and really make a taboo without actually ever meaning to. And I think that that's what we see from this character a lot. So the thing that really convinced all of us was when my sister and I met with Elise, the playwright, and we kind of pitched this idea of like, can we put this story, like this story I think is important. It's important to share this story on two different levels. I think that it's important for us as queer folks or even just queer allies to be able to look at examples of people like Trisha and say, okay, this is what it looks like when someone is doing the work. It's not pretty. It's not perfect. There are flaws. And that doesn't mean that we need to say, oh, it's okay every time you make a mistake. Like, she does some damage. She messes up and it hurts. But being able to have grace for the process of learning, because if we don't actually allow for learning to be a process, then learning just won't happen. And we end up polarizing further and further so that we have people like there are other voices of people in the play who are so afraid of being wrong, so they just dig in their heels and refuse to accept that their beliefs could be challenged. It's just like a, nope, I'm not wrong, I can't accept that. So I think that in that sense, it's important for us who are queer people and who are allies to be able to see that from that perspective and really recognize how to support that work. That said, I also think that in some of our more safe communities, it can be easy to forget how it is outside of the safety bubble. One of my best friends and I talk about this all the time, where we're like, oh, I'm so like in the theater community in Vancouver with a bunch of like burlesque dancers and like queer people, and like I sometimes forget that people are homophobic. And being able to recognize like, no, these are still things that people are struggling with, and even people who have unconscious biases. So the fact is that somebody like that, somebody who is in Trisha's position, maybe a parent of a queer child or someone who is struggling with reconciling their own faith or their own traditional upbringing with allyship, they're going to be a lot more comfortable going to a play about a 40-year-old woman wrestling with that than they are going to be comfortable going to a play about a queer kid being queer. So I think that there is space for both versions of the play to to exist, either played by somebody who fits Trisha's mold a bit more, or in my case, where I'm representing Joe. So for us, at the end of the day, it was like, in Vancouver, in this particular community, we feel like it's more appropriate to be able to give this queer story and still show that journey, but still have it being told by somebody with a queer body, and centering that voice. And then this way we also get to see Joe's response and Joe's just emotions in watching their mom go through this process. We get to see the impact. One of the big things for me is, like, you look at the rates, like the rates in terms of mental health for kids who are genderqueer or trans, and the astronomical difference it makes for them to be raised in an affirming home. And even just the fact that we get to see Joe as a grown-up, I think, makes a statement to how successful Trisha ends up being in her allyship. That said, I know that when Elise first wrote the play, and I believe she performed it, she was in a way more conservative context. So she's in a context where nobody is going to go and watch a play about a non-binary kid. But they will probably watch a play performed by, like, an attractive white blonde woman. So it's like a, you know, meeting people where they're at and telling the story that needs to be told and using what you need to make sure the story gets out there.
Yes. Thank you for that answer. When I read the criticism myself, I was like, really weighing how, you know, it doesn't matter where we find ourselves centered in relationship or centered in some kind of a circumstance, right? We each have a story that is our story of whatever that experience is, which doesn't invalidate someone else's experience or story, but I also totally understand, working at community radio, where we center, you know, or try to center voices that are underrepresented and not heard in the mainstream, that, you know, sometimes, you know, the ability to lift up those other voices that don't get heard is the better way to go. So yeah, thanks for sharing the process about that. I'm conscious of time, and I want to just have you tell us, because I know that the play has partnered with the Rainbow Refugees organization. So tell us about that, and tell us what the details are of, you know, the where, when, how, and how can people see this?
Cool.
Yeah.
First off, Rainbow Refugees, we reached out to them a couple of weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago now. Time means nothing anymore. We got the idea initially to partner with a charity from Elise, the playwright. She said that she always offers to give one performance of the royalties for free if that performance is specifically goes to a charity that supports LGBTQ and or specifically trans folks. So we did some looking into what organizations there are around, and Rainbow Refugees stood out to us. The play takes place in Texas. The world there is different than it is here in Canada. There are some similarities, but, like, it is a different reality for people south of the border right now. And so in recognizing how much more dangerous it is in other parts of the world, we were really, really inspired by the work that Rainbow Refugees is doing. And so basically they work with people both, in Vancouver and overseas, who are, essentially who are refugees, fleeing persecution based on their gender identity and or sexuality. So they work with people trying to get them here, and they also work with people once they are here to kind of help them to find community and resources and get settled. So they're going to be at our preview performance, and all of the tickets for our preview performance, all the sales of those tickets is going to go directly to them. And they might attend another performance at some point to do a quick little talk back. We've also offered them, any of their members are allowed to come see our show for free. So we're hoping to get some of them out here just to check it out. Because I know if you're from elsewhere, one of the best ways to start like seeing the community is to go see some theater. As for people who want to book tickets, our website is farfromthetreeproductions.com. And right on the front page, there is a bunch of stuff about Pink Unicorn for current productions. You can click on there and it'll take you to our ticketing page. We're also Far From the Tree Productions on Instagram and on Facebook, so people can follow us there.
Fantastic. I can also post as a hot link to your website when I post the audio to the show today, so that folks who are listening and, you know, have their ears perked up can easily link and get to your website for tickets. So thank you so much, Shell. That was a lot of really great information, and I'm excited for your show. I hope it goes as well as possible, and that you manage to stay sane in the in the days to come. I know it comes to crunch time, and it's like, holy moly.
That was assuming I was sane to begin with, so.
For you out there in Radioland listening, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with a show we're not sure about what it'll look like at the moment. And Democracy Now! Is coming right up. So stay tuned and see you next time.